Sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. I'm currently on day 6 of a 2-week fast for medical reasons, and for all you clappers out there, I'm fine. It's fine. It's all fine. I am hungry as fuck, though. True story. This week we're going to talk all things Essen. Lol, just kidding. You can tune into literally anyone else, and it's all Essen Spiele all the time, and so it should be. I unfortunately have nothing to offer in support of Essen, one, because I live in Australia, and two, because anything I would have to offer would just be regurgitated content from someone else. So this week instead we're going to cover off the con, in more broad terms, but also what it looks like here down under, although we live on this beautiful island that is, according to our national anthem, girt by sea. Who thought girt was a good word to use? Use girt in a conversation this week. That's your homework. Although we live on this beautiful island, we do have our own board gaming culture. So with that, on with the show. This is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old gracelessly. Today we're going to look at some of the games I've played over the last week, thoughts on those, and we're going to touch on what's coming in with INCOMING! 4 exclamation marks. And we're going to make me feel better about my life choices with FOMO MOFO. We are, of course, going to give someone the clap. This week's episode may be a bit shorter as I'm getting ready for travel. I am off to PAX Australia next week, and accordingly, there will be no episode next week. I'll be playing games all day, all night, all week, all weekend, so there will be no recording. I will be looking to potentially get some sound bites while I'm there to include as in the PAX Roundup episode the following week. And this will also be the last of the My Favorite Things series as we will move on to our full regular format following the PAX Roundup. Now onto my favorite part of the show, the games from this week. I must admit, it wasn't a huge week for gaming due to some scheduling conflicts, but great games nonetheless. Super Trooper and I finished off our campaign of Arkham Horror. I found out what was at the end of the road to Carcosa. As I suspected, it was not pretty. We did win. We won the campaign, which I think this is my third Arkham Horror campaign. I think this would be the first one that we have, quote-unquote, won with me at the table. I'm not saying I'm to blame for the losses in their entirety the last two times. The Road to Carcosa was excellent. It was a really fun, really engaging campaign. And we're getting set up to start a new campaign as soon as Super Trooper can draw 4 new characters, because the new one we're playing is going to have this really interesting mechanic where you have a character during the daytime and a character during dream state or something similar. And so over the 8 campaigns, you play 4 with one, 4 with the other. Very much looking forward to that. We got a 3-player game in, as I had hoped, of Darwin's Journey. Darwin's Journey had just arrived last week to Super Trooper's front porch, and we played that, 3 of us, Dustin, Super Trooper, and I. And Darwin's Journey is a game that I was very much looking forward to playing. It's got great production. It's got a great turn structure. It's got fun, tight turns that are really fast-paced. Pieces are really tactile. Darwin's Journey, I guess, one of the things I really liked about it is you start off with a certain amount of capability, and that capability grows, much like most Euros. Euro, you Euro to the Euro, and you Euro more Euro. But in Darwin's Journey, you have your workers who each have a specialization based on navigation or exploration, or, I don't know, you have a blue, green, and red specialization. And your individual workers can get more and more powerful as you invest more time into them. You've got to sail your ship along, and your ship has to stay ahead of the head of the fleet. I think it was called the Beagle, something, 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 Euro, Euro. It was amazing. If you don't stay ahead of the ship, you're penalized for your discoveries, you're penalized for your points, because you're behind on your research. If you don't bring things to the museum, you don't go down the evolution track. It was really clever. And despite it being quite a deep Euro with deep decision spaces and decisions that lead to more decisions that lead to more decisions, I think the teach is really only about 15-20 minutes, and the rules reference after that is very, very low. The need to go back and check things, because all the decisions you make on the board are fundamentally made with the same metric in mind, and that's, well, my worker has this amount of strength, so I can get this amount of work out of this space, or I can take another action at a lesser sort of capability, or we have these other actions which are quite generic that any worker can take. And so you've got your five or six different workspaces on the board that you can send people out to, and you can absolutely be blocked out of them. You know, if your workers don't get powerful enough, then the more powerful spaces that open up later in the game, you can't access at all. But that doesn't leave you without choices. There are other choices in Darwin's Journey. You can research a new worker space, and if you do that, you get to do the space for free, which is amazing, because you might never have a level 3 green worker, for example. But if you unlock that space for everyone else, you get to use it whether you have that level 3 green worker or not. And so you're never really cock-blocked out of anything. I had a really, really great time with my first play of Darwin's Journey. I think from memory, it ended in a tie. Dusty and I finished in a tie. Tie's not a win, tie's a tie. So it's not a real game. So we're going to have to just play it all over again from the start. Darwin's Journey was fantastic. I got a game of Ironwood in with Lou. Lou's my eldest daughter. She doesn't play games very often, but when she does, she gets right in. She is hyper aggressive, hyper competitive, and very, very good at beating my ass solidly. So I got thoroughly trounced. You know, in Ironwood, when I say thoroughly trounced, I mean, I lost. It wasn't a huge, I guess, you know, with Ironwood, there's no score. It's win or lose. Once the game end happens, it's over. Somebody achieves their game end, that's it. You've got a goal and it's done. Ironwood, I've covered this off in a previous episode. It's a two-player battler. It's an asymmetrical battler by Mind Clash. It's really excellent. It's really fun. I'm looking forward to playing with Lou again and swapping. I played the Wood faction. She was the Iron faction. And it was a great time. Had a great time, about an hour, and it was done. Got to play a game of Castles of Burgundy, the special edition, because the special edition of Castles of Burgundy is the only edition of Castles of Burgundy. I played that with Super Trooper. And we played with the Vineyards expansion, which we almost always play with. We also played with the Shipping Lanes expansion, which we almost always play with, and we were playing with the Outposts expansion, which really didn't add a lot with the if you haven't played Castles of Burgundy, this means nothing to you. If you have, you probably know what the Outposts expansion is. The Outposts expansion means in your duchy you've got to connect the three outposts with stuff. Doesn't matter what you connect it with, and if you do, it's a race. You get the most points. If you do it second, you still get some points. It's a couple of points. Castles of Burgundy is points, 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 points. You get points for this, you get points for putting something out, you get points for taking something back, you get points for growing grapes, you know. And the thing I find with the Vineyards expansion, I actually think next time we play, because we almost always play with the Vineyards expansion, if you don't pursue the Vineyards aggressively, you have no choice of winning. You've no chance. The Vineyards are the make or break, because the points compound so quickly with the Vineyards. And, you know, I guess it makes sense, you know, if you're two dukes in Burgundy and one of us has this wonderful expensive vineyard, then everyone's going to buy wine from us and we're definitely going to be more successful than the other duke over there who has a land full of monasteries and monks who give you endgame points but don't really drive people to your duchy. I don't know. I don't know the meaning of it all. But I think I'm going to actually propose next time we play without vineyards. I think it's potentially a cleaner game with a fairer race. And that's not to say with Vineyards it's not fair. I just feel like if Vineyards are on the table, you have no choice but to pursue Vineyards aggressively. I won that game with Super Trooper, you know, and I won because my Vineyards were absolutely chock full of grapes and I was able to score all of them. And I think I'd like to go back to playing it without the Vineyards at least once, just to take that pressure off and make it more about the tiles that you're choosing, the hexes that you're choosing to build, and what that end game engine looks like for points, rather than the distraction of, well, there are grapes. Those grapes suit me. I have to take those grapes now, because if I don't take those grapes now, I'm behind. I love Castles of Burgundy. As I said, the special edition is the only edition. You can't play anything else. Anything else is totally unplayable. Yeah, Castles of Burgundy special edition. It's that or nothing. Unless, you know, you have the other edition, in which case, it's that. And I got a game of... I played an exit game with the Peanut. The Peanut absolutely slays the exit series. She is 9 years old and she has got a brain for those little puzzles that come out of that box. We played the Haunted Roller Coaster, which is only a 2 out of 5 for difficulty. We've only played 2s and 3s, she and I. She beats me to the solution 9 puzzles out of 10 at exit. She loves it. It was a rainy day here in Sydney, Australia, or it was a chilly day. We were down in the bunker. School holidays, if you don't know. School holidays the last week here. So the peanut and I, we pulled an exit out. We put on the table. We smashed it in about 70 minutes, which is really good time to knock over an exit game. And she was fantastic at it. And it was a great experience, and I loved it. Spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear this, then skip forward 60 seconds. In the bottom of the Haunted Roller Coaster box, there is a plastic spider. I am a genuine 100% arachnophobe, which makes Australia not the best place for me to be living. So when I popped the box open and I went hunting for other things as you do in exit, I nearly shat myself here at the table. And then when I showed it to the peanut, she screamed also. So there were two of us screaming in the bunker because there was a spider in the box. We laughed, we moved on, we solved the mysteries. It was great. Following that, I got a game of Wingspan with the fox. Wingspan is one of the games that the fox really, really likes. She will play a few different games, but Wingspan is one that she's very happy to go back to over and over and over. She loves the decision space. She loves that engine build. She loves the beautiful art. We've got a charming wooden dice tower, so it makes this lovely chunky clack-clack when you throw your dice into it. I can't remember the score. Doesn't matter. I go to the table with the fox, and it was a blast. After that, got a game of Ark Nova in with Super Trooper. Ark Nova is one of our perennial favorites. We go back to it again and again and again. I think of the Euro-y Euros, it's the one he and I have played the most over the years. As I said before in a previous episode, we always play with Marine Worlds. We love the new zoo packs. I think I won this one, which is rare for me. Super Trooper normally wipes the table with me. For Ark Nova, often I am left with sometimes a negative score, which was the last game we played. I think I won this one. And Ark Nova is always a blast. We love Ark Nova. It's got a great table presence. It's got the shittest coins / money of any game that you will ever play. Black squares. I mean, I don't need fancy metal coins for every game I play, but also I totally do. Okay, some little coins with elephants and monkeys on them, or popcorn buckets from the kiosk, or something, anything but black squares. Ugh. Yes, I have other coins I could sub in. That's not the point. Other than the crappy black money, Ark Nova's a triumph. It's a great game, and I never tire of it, and I never ever get, even if I'm getting my butt whooped in it, I never have a bad time. I always love the puzzle. I always love the puzzle of my mat and the cards. Marine Worlds came with asymmetrical action cards, which we've talked about before, which I love, love, love. It adds something to the game that's different every single game. And I rounded out the week with a game of Apiary. Super Trooper and I played Apiary. The first time we played Apiary, I just got the feeling Super Trooper was a bit lukewarm on it. So I hadn't really suggested it. And we'd finished Ark Nova. And he said, oh, how about Apiary? And I'm like, yeah, man, let's do it. I really like Apiary. It's fine. Apiary it's a worker placement game with a couple of little interesting twists in it. Space Bees! Apiary, interestingly, Apiary, we're going to talk about PAX Australia later on in this episode. I had no interest in Apiary whatsoever. I thought Space Bees, woof, like what? And I went to PAX. And of course, Stonemaier was at PAX and they were demoing Apiary. And I sat down and I got to play, I think it was about 4 or 5 turns of Apiary, and that's all they were doing because the queue for the Stonemaier demos was massive. They had Expeditions there for trial. They had Wingspan, obviously, for people who never played Wingspan. There's probably 2 or 3 of them left in Sydney. And they were trying Apiary, and I thought, well, stuff it. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to try it. And I did. It's a charming time at the table. It's not offensive. You've got this great little mechanic where your bees go out and they come back and they go out and they come back and they bring stuff back to your hive. And every time they come back, they age. They start off at a certain age. When they get to level 4, they quote unquote hibernate, # die. You know, your bees die and they're gone. But once when they die, you get to put a token on a special bonus. And the game ends when one person gets their special bonuses out or all the special bonuses are grabbed. So the timer is really organic. The spaces around the board that you can farm out to with your bee workers are all really easy to understand. They're easy to intuit. They're easy to parse. And Apiary is a fun night. I had the new expansion on the table. So we had 2 of the new factions. We had a lot of the new options out on the board with regards to things like the modules that slot into dances, although we only ended up having 1 new dance developed. And for those that haven't played, dances are where you can go and run conversion of resources. You're basically dancing to show the bees where the resources are. Apiary is, it's fun. It's light. It's on the lighter end of medium, I would say. It's got the fox's attention. She saw it on the table and she went, oh, I think I'd like to play that, which I love. If I can get the fox into something else other than Wingspan, which is great. I don't mind playing Wingspan with her. She's starting to grab on to worker placement games again, which is great. I mentioned a couple episodes ago she played Wondrous Creatures and had a great time. She has played Everdell. Everdell, I think, was a push for her. I think the tightness of the resources on Everdell was just a bit much. But it looks like we're going to get a second game of Apiary in after recording this before PAX with the Fox. And Apiary is great, and I think I got my butt kicked from memory, from recollection. Let me look up the score here. Yes, it was 120-93 for Super Troopers, so Apiary was a wipe. No tears. I don't mind losing. As I always say, I like to win. I love to play. And those are the games that were. As I said, it wasn't a huge week for gaming. A lot of things that were overriding the game schedule. And that's okay sometimes, as long as it doesn't last too long. On now to my favorite part of the pod, incoming! Four exclamation marks. Well, it finally happened. Aeon Trespass Odyssey is in the house. Cue Metallica's Nothing Else Matters, which we won't actually play for copyright reasons. So, yes, ATO is in the house. This is a monster of a game. It was a 38-kilogram delivery. The postman pulled up in his white van and looked forlornly at me from the street because it's about 40 meters from the street to our front door. And I put my shoes on, I came out and I said, it's a big one today, why don't I give you a hand? His kids will be eating again because I'm getting deliveries. It is a monster of a game. I did a little bit of an unboxing. I didn't post any photos of the core box. I did post some photos of the expansion box because there are hundreds of unboxing videos and photos of the original. The expansion I only had a quick peek into. I wanted to look at some of the minis. That's up on our socials if you want to have a look. But yeah, pulling it apart, it looks to be spectacular. I am very much looking forward to this. For me, the anticipation of getting this to the table and getting it started is superb. I just, this part right here, this anticipation, this vibration in my little gamer soul of can't wait to get this to the table is superb. I've based the, what I can discern are the starting minis for the game. There's about 10 I want to paint before we start playing. And then there's a round two because I've taken everything. I was all in on this. I've got all the God form minis, which is a form that you move to as you get closer and closer to death. You actually get more and more powerful. So when you hit a certain threshold, you actually take on the form of one of the gods of Olympus. And so I've got those as well. The game itself, as in the physicality of the game, the core box, I think it's about 18 kilos for the core box. There's a lot of plastic in there. Sorry, not sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Sustainability. You know, it's 2024. I have three daughters. I've talked to those before. I'd really like to leave them somewhere wonderful to live. But the man-child in me looks at these toys and just says, look, I'm going to take one for the team here. We have solar power. We have a battery. We recycle. We do all the good stuff that we can. This is a game that I am really delighted to have, despite the fact that there's a little eco-terrorism in every box. The insert is an abomination. It's another one where the insert really is just non-functional. There is zero space to sleeve these cards. And while I'm not necessarily into sleeving all the cards for a 300-hour campaign, I will certainly be looking to sleeve the cards that get a lot of rotation. I don't know what they are yet. You know, I haven't unpacked the box to the point where it's ready to play. So I don't know what the cards are that are going to be in extreme high rotation. Obviously, the battle decks and whatnot. I would like to think it's probably not more than, a couple hundred cards that will need sleeving. The inserts, it's so packed in there. And I get it. They couldn't literally make the box any bigger. It's perched on top of a 4x4 Kallax and takes up more than half of it. So I don't think they could make the box any bigger without causing someone grievous bodily harm. But I don't know what to do about storage in between plays. Luckily, I've got a lot of empty Kallax cells, so I might find some sort of way to just tuck it into the cells rather than reboxing it in between games. Laserox has a insert for Aeon Trespass. It's almost as expensive as the game itself. Not quite, but it's up there. I'm not sure if I can justify $300 Australian just for a game insert. So I probably will be hunting around for something cobbled together that's, not off the shelf where I can store it in between games. I might invest in a couple of IKEA drawers just for Aeon Trespass so that I can put it away in between games and I've got a spot for it. But it's here. I'm eagerly awaiting the Learn to Play videos by the legendary Paul Grogan. He was shocked to hear that it hit my table because he's not meant to be releasing these videos for a couple of weeks yet. So he was very surprised, is probably a better way to put it. We swapped a couple of messages, and he was surprised to hear that it was already delivering. The videos are done. Apparently, they've been done since March. And so I'm eagerly awaiting those so I can actually learn to play. And that's Aeon Trespass. That's about all I've got for incoming this week. There's not a lot else coming in right now. There will be a lot coming in between now and the end of the year. Now onto my favorite part of the show, FOMO Mofo, where we talk about my ongoing struggle to not spend more money on more games just because there are more games. As always, this is not an exhaustive list, merely those campaigns that I'm watching closely, either because the games suit my play, they fill a need that is poorly filled or not filled enough, or they have pretty toys. Sometimes all three. I have successfully resisted the FOMO of Puerto Rico. Screw you, Awaken Realms, said with love. I have a ton of games coming out to crowdfunding in the next weeks, and I am going to be holding onto those funds for other games. I have pledged for Galactic Cruise, and while the campaign's been over for a while, the pledge manager only recently opened. Galactic Cruise looks fantastic. Art by my favorite artist, that's Ian O'Toole, and this game actually got a full thumbs up and endorsement by Vital Lacerda himself. Any game that is endorsed by Vital Lacerda will certainly get my money. I'm not sure if you can late pledge, but if you can, this looks to be something quite special. I'm not convinced, or don't know I should say, if it's going to retail. But if it doesn't, you can absolutely bet this will be going to reprint next year. The first campaign was a huge success. This is the first game by Kinson Key, who are the game designers, developers. Paul Grogan, who I tend to mention once or twice because I'm a bit of a Paul Grogan fangirl, has said this is his pick of 2024. Recently, given that the game's not coming out until 2025... he's nudged that back and said, well, it's likely going to be not his game in 2024, only because it's not out in 2024. But if it was, it would be his pick for the best game of the year. And this one doesn't quite fall into FOMO Mofo, as I will not be missing out, much like Galactic Cruise. And that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Tales to Amaze by Unmatched. This went live last week, and the campaign is a lot bigger than I thought it would be. As in expense-wise and depth-wise. I was expecting another box like the previous Tales to Amaze. This is not that. The core box is, I'll say, only $80. $80 is a lot for a game in the US. In Australia, it's not a lot. That's about $120 Australian dollars. That's almost, sadly, what we would call average price for a decent board game in Australia. That's the core game, the core box. So it's not bad for that actual amount of content when you get the four turtles and the four sidekicks and the two villains and the board. And it really looks great. The add-ons look great too. I'm not sure how deep I'll be going in on this. I'm 100% in on the base game right now, and I'm going to let that go through to Pledge Manager. I'll have several months to decide how much more money I want to send them. I'm likely in for the custom sleeves and the deluxe tokens at least. They look great. There's an upgraded mini box, which will be a no for me, only because I prefer the tokens for the minions and sidekicks. If you haven't played Unmatched, you often get a main character and you've got sidekicks and minions that play along with them, and so you're manipulating two pieces on the board. And I find it a lot easier to parse the board state when the sidekicks are tokens rather than more minis. But what I do love about this is that these extra minis, which replace all the tokens, they're in a pizza box. Okay, I'm Gen X, guys. I'm Gen X, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is, you know, I get that it started off as a joke. The whole comic, when it first launched, it was a joke. It was a parody. It wasn't meant to be anything, and it went bonkers. I don't care. You know, I grew up watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I want to say grew up all through my 20s as well. But I won't be in for the minis, but I do appreciate that they have packed them in a pizza box and labeled them extra toppings. There are hero decks that are going to be released for Shredder and Krang. So you can play as them against the other. That's a great add-on too. My only disappointment at this stage, if I can lodge a disappointment, is there appears to be no Sagi Yojimbo. Usagi Yojimbo is the Ninja Rabbit, for those that don't know. And if you don't know, well, then you haven't really lived. It's mildly forgivable, though, as we do have Casey Jones, and Casey Jones is the hockey forward extraordinaire with anger management issues. And Casey Jones is a fantastic character. We're getting promo cards done by Kevin Eastman himself, which is also amazing. Kevin Eastman is the original writer, graphics design writer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the other campaign aspect that I quite like is that there are individual artists engaged and named for each major item. So, for example, one artist did all the art for the cards for Donatello. One artist did all the art for the cards for Leonardo. Each villain got their own artist. Each board, front and back, got their own artist. And they're all named. They're all credited. And I think that's really great. In an era where a lot of games that are mass-produced, not this is mass-produced, but a lot of games are mass-produced, and game designers and artists aren't named at all. You know, and I get for something like Hasbro Games, they might go, well, we have enough money, we don't care. I'm not saying that's the case. Alleged. But I do think it's amazing. I think it's amazing that that level of credibility and credit is applied to the individual contributors. As a father of a young lady who's going into graphics design, I think it's a wonderful world to be looking at potentially, given the use of AI sort of bleeding into everything we do. I think being able to offer credit where credit is due at that level is a really special thing. I maintain that Donnie is the greatest turtle. Fight me. I probably won't be all in on this. I will be close. We'll see how much money I have left after PAX next week. I probably won't be in on the minis. I'm going to try to resist the neoprene playmat. I do love me a playmat. I'm going to try to resist. Next week, Cloudspire Harbinger is going live. I do love Cloudspire. This is one that I will not be able to resist as well. This is one of the reasons that I have resisted Puerto Rico. And the whatever it is, $350 that I would have needed for Puerto Rico is because Cloudspire, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I've got to pay my pledge manager yet for Galactic Cruise, which while isn't hundreds and hundreds, it's going to eat into the budget. And this is supposedly, and I tend to believe them because Chip Theory is by and large what I can tell, quite an ethical company and transparent company. This is the last iteration and set of expansions for Cloudspire. This is the last that's coming out. There is a lot. So it's not like we're short on stuff. There's quite a few. I've got all the other expansions and all the other factions for Cloudspire. I don't have the minis. I don't want the minis. The minis are basically tower sleeves that hold your chips. I think they actually make the board harder to use and harder to parse and harder to get through. But given this is the last iteration, these are the last expansions, my money's on a big box storage solution a la the Too Many Bones Trove chest. Maybe not something as big, weighty, and meaty as the Trove chest. Cloudspire doesn't quite have the same level of content, but certainly a big box solution is something that I would be expecting. Cloudspire will be available to back on GameFound from next week. I am expecting it to be expensive. It's going to be a big one. Cloudspire and Chip Theory games are not cheap. Their production is over the top. It's all neoprene. It's all heavy plastic. It's all made to last longer than you will ever live. If you've not played Cloudspire, for the uninitiated, it's basically a tower defense. It's an action programming tower defense game. And so you have to look at the board state, what people have put out in each round. You've got to program your troops. And then you open the gate and they flood through this maze and they follow a predetermined set of rules. And they do what that individual unit does until they are no more. And then you start again for the next round. It's a really interesting mechanic for a board game. It's tower defense-y, but it's also RPG-y, and that in between rounds you're spending points to unlock new units, to develop your little fortress. You can make your gates stronger at the fortress, so when the opposing team arrives at your gates, it's harder for them to bash them down. And that's how you win the round or the scenarios, by getting the gates beaten down and ultimately obliterating your opponent. One more that I think is interesting, and not one that I was really looking at and didn't have a lot of information on, and that's called Deliverance, Council of the Fallen. It wasn't on my radar. I guess largely because it's a game that's been around for a while. This is a reprint with expansions. I mean, it's a 2023, I think, release, so I should have known all about it. I don't know why I didn't. It wasn't on my radar. It's an Angelic Warfare game. It looks great. It's like March of the Ants. March of the Ants looks great, and I had no idea that it existed before it went live on Kickstarter. But it was a contender for 2023 Solo Game of the Year. So it should have been on my radar. I should have known what this game is. Anything, and I don't mean in one list. There were two or three lists where it was a contender for solo game of the year. I am a solo gamer. I love playing with myself. So it's got my interest. And I think it's worth a look. What's really interesting, I guess, as a part of this, is that if you buy this game, you also get quarterly scenario packs. And I looked back, and yes, that for the last 2 years, whatever, since the game's released, every 3 months like clockwork, they release these quarterly scenarios. And it's not just a, well, change this one thing. It's a 2 or 3 page, well-produced, graphically designed scenario pack that creates new ways to play the game, new layouts to play the game, new challenges to play the game. And I think that that's really great of a game designer to approach the game and go, well, buy our game. I mean, we're not going to promise to take care of you forever. But there's more coming, and they've delivered on that. It's about 115 Australian for the base game, so it's about mid-tier price-wise. Like, but there's a ton of content in there. The angelic minis look great. The game mechanic looks really interesting. I'll probably throw a dollar in and just see where it goes. See how much money I have further down the track. And it'll give me some time to go down the rabbit hole and check it out and find detail. That's on Kickstarter. It's called Deliverance, Council of the Fallen. It's got my attention. And that's it for FOMO Mofo for this week. This week, we're talking about The Con. No, we're not talking about the like of Mythic's Games' alleged misconduct. Though that's a debate of con versus gross mismanagement. And I will insert the word alleged here again, very quietly, alleged misconduct. No, we're talking about 3 days of board games, board game immersion. We're talking about your family calling the police because you're not answering your phone. And you're nowhere to be found. They can't find you. Want to find my husband. We're talking about getting together with your people for board game binging, brain melt, frantically shoveled in lunches, and a whole lot of awesome memories. This week's monologue is about The Con. The joys, the tribulations, the frustrations, though those are few. I had the unmitigated pleasure this year of attending PlayCon in July, which, a little bit of trivia, is Australia's largest board gaming convention dedicated exclusively to play. I will also be heading off to PAX Australia next week. I want to talk about them both and why they should both have a place in your annual rotation. And I will touch on Essen just in brief, not in detail. As I said, I don't have anything to value add about Essen. I've not been. It's the biggest board gaming convention in the world, if not by attendance, certainly by importance. Essen is the release point for everything new, essentially. All the game designers, this is where they will not just release, but sometimes even announce stuff that's coming out, not even now, next year, the year after. This is for all the press releases. This is come try the new thing. And people go to Essen basically to shop. You know, all the new releases are there to try. Many of them you can be bought. I'll be honest, they're not cheap. You go to Essen, you're not getting any deals. What you are getting is a space at the front of the queue. You know, the Fox's offer to travel to Essen with me, you know, noting my interest in board games isn't just passing. I mean, she's clearly being very selfish, trying to wrangle a trip to Germany when she doesn't even like board games. I mean, she loves sausage. So I'm assuming that's her motivation. And don't be gross. I mean sausages. The Fox loves sausages. She lived in Europe. She went to Germany. Sausage and sauerkraut. She absolutely adores it. So look, selfishly, she's just trying to get some really good European sausage. And I suppose dangling the carrot of maybe I can go to Essen. I'm not sure I ever would. I like the idea of it. But I'm not one that goes to the cons necessarily just for shopping. And that's not to say you don't get to try the games, but also Essen is huge. Like, I don't know, what Essen, I don't even know. I'm guessing 70, 80, 90,000 people descend on Essen. I don't speak German, so getting around town, I'm going to have to just point at sausages and my gaping mouth when I want to order food. And that could go very, very wrong. But at Essen, you get your releases, you get your games, all the personalities are there. You could have won a ticket to play a game with David Turksey and Paul Grogan and Vitaly Serda. I mean, there's some bucket list stuff right there. You get to try games that aren't released, like Galactic Cruise. Galactic Cruise is going to be at Essen to play. In fact, Paul Grogan is going to be running the demo table for Galactic Cruise. And you're able to buy games there for the first time, like Daitoshi from Devir Games, which looks to be amazing. I'm not going to go into a full swag of releases. As I've said, there are much better informed individuals than I for this one. I'll go through a quick shopping list of games that I'm very excited to see more of following Essen. You can look these up yourself or watch anyone else's videos or anyone else's podcasts of people who are European based, or, you know, Dice Tower, for example, or any of these guys. They'll go through a full comprehensive Essen list. But I'll give you a few that I'm looking forward to seeing more information on. And these will be, you know, post-Essen. Occasionally we get lucky and these are co-released or parallel released at PAX in Australia, given the timing between them. But here's a quick list. Civolution by Stefan Feld. I've actually pre-ordered this. It's being released at Essen, is my understanding. Can't wait to see that one. SETI, The Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Looks amazing. We'll probably get that in Australia next June, the way international releases go. Gameplay sounds stellar, pardon the pun. Daitoshi, which I previously mentioned, by Devir Games. That's also done by Danny Garcia, most recently of Barcelona and Windmill Valley. So, wow, like big, big pedigree there on that game. And Daitoshi looks fantastic. It's in the Botoku universe, which is apparently a thing. The Ark Nova second zoo pack is being released. People are buying it, much to my green color. There's some new mechanics there, which include the ability to somehow save cards for later. Cards in your hand can be sort of saved for use later. And I don't know how it works, but I've just seen a little teaser on that. More Ark Nova is always welcome. Black Forest is out at Essen, which is the re-implementation of Glass Road by Uwe Rosenberg. They've cleaned up a lot of the stuff. It's got a brand new polish, a brand new look. It looks amazing. Minos, Dawn of the Bronze Age from Board and Dice is one that I really, really want to own. And I am really gagging and hopeful that this may be at PAX. Probably not. Board and Dice doesn't do that. But for example, last year, Nucleum was released last year at Essen. And we didn't get Nucleum here until like April or May. So probably not. But I can always hope. Saltfjord, which is another re-implementation, this time of Santa Maria, by Christian Ospi, who, interestingly, also designed Revive, which is one of my favorite games of the last few years. A couple more. We got Shackleton Base. The board looks as exciting as Smartphone Inc., but apparently the gameplay is great. Come to think of it, the gameplay for Smartphone Inc. was great. It was a terrible-looking board, Smartphone Inc. Like, it looks like something that the Peanut put together. Here, play this game, Dad. I wrote a game called Smartphone Inc. Plays great! Who knew? It looks boring as fuck, but it plays great. And then there's a new mystery reveal from Board and Dice coming to Essen. Apparently one of the T-Games is getting a full rework. It's probably going to be well announced by the time this goes to air. Smart Money's on Trismegistus? Trismegistus, which was co-designed by Danielle Tashini, but at the time of this recording, it's a total guess. As I previously mentioned, in very rare occurrences, PAX might have some of these very new titles. I know last year, for example, there were a couple of titles that popped up at PAX that were at the same time as Essen. White Castle, for example, was one of those, but I'm not holding my breath. And there are literally hundreds of new releases at Essen each year. I can't imagine traveling to it from Australia. I'd be paying more for bringing back 50 kilos of games than I would for my ticket there. And FOMO, my old friend. I'd love to go for the vibe. I don't think I'd be buying anything. But also, FOMO, I hate waiting. So that's a little quick bit on Essen. If you don't know anything about Essen, then you're unlikely to be on this podcast. If you listen to me, you probably know more about Essen than I do. Let's talk about PlayCon. PlayCon, as previously mentioned, is the largest board game convention in the Southern Hemisphere. If I haven't got that right, I'm going to say it anyway. It's dedicated exclusively to play, not to releases and buying and purchasing games. This year was the inaugural year for PlayCon, and it's put together by the legends of Board Game Barbecue. They put it together, they set it up, they ran it, and they did an absolutely magnificent job of it. That was 3 days of playing games. It was Friday to Sunday. Sunday was a slightly shorter day, which I guess you have to do because you got to get out of there. People got to go to work on Monday. I would have loved a couple more hours on Sunday, but that it is what it is. And PlayCon had a huge game library. I want to say they probably had 300 games in the library. And because of the parking situation with PlayCon, it was really easy for us to bring our own games. You know, Super Trooper brought Cthulhu Wars. I brought Castles of Burgundy. You could bring your own games there and get them to the table really, really easily. There are some big names in attendance. Martin Wallace was there. I got to meet Ian O'Toole. He was an absolute gentleman. He signed a print for me that I have up in the bunker. The team from the great legal firm of Philip Phillips and Hill, also known as Garfield Games, was there. Thinker Themer were there. Stella and Tarrant were there. Emily from Shut Up and Sit Down was there. It was massive. I didn't sleep for 3 days. You know, it's not that it was that far from home. By the time you finish gaming at 11:30 or 11:45, it's an hour and 15 minutes home. It's 1 o'clock when you get home. Your brain is on stun because you've been playing games for 12 hours of the day. By the time your brain winds down, it's 2 o'clock. I'm 50, so my natural body clock is, hey, it's 5:30, time to get up, mofo, despite my protest to the otherwise. So it was probably a 4 hours sleep a night, and off we go back. It was fantastic. It really, really was. You know, the guys that put that together have done a great job, and they've announced that it's going again next year. It's in July. From memory, it's July 11th or 13th. They haven't released if it's going to be in the same place or not. I dare say it won't be, because I'd like to think these guys would be able to get another 150, 200 people or more to round two. And while there was plenty of space there for the people in attendance, I don't think they could put another couple hundred people in there without us being on top of each other. So fingers crossed, it's in a slightly bigger space, but as I said, where it was perfect. It was great. You could park underneath. I had the most amazing time. I met some amazing people. You know, I played some amazing games, highlights. I played a game of smartphone with Andrea. Andrea will probably never listen to this podcast. Andrea, you blew my mind. Andrea was there with her friends. Andrea, it was Canberra-based. And I'm going to guess Andrea's probably 70. And she sat down for Smartphone Inc. And we had the best time. And my favorite part of Andrea's, one of my favorite stories from PlayCon, is we were sitting down to a game late in the evening. It was about 9:30, 9:45. And I looked over my shoulder, and there's Andrea setting up Terraforming Mars at like 10:15 at night. And I was like, I pointed to the table with my guys and said, that's what I want in 20 years. I want to be 70 and setting up Terraforming Mars at 10 at night. It was a blast. We met some great people. The vibe was outstanding. You know, and when Super Trooper brought Cthulhu Wars out and put on the table, if you haven't seen Cthulhu Wars, go look it up. You've got these like 17 centimeter minis of Cthulhu and Haster and whatnot. It's a huge map. It's a ridiculous game. And we had people all around the table just watching. They wanted to see the game. They wanted to watch it play. And then we played Castles of Burgundy, the special edition, because the special edition is the only edition. And we had people literally coming up to the table going, oh, can I touch your game? I was like, dude, fill your boots. Grab some acrylic chips and just run them through your fingers. So everyone was there to have a great time. It was superb. If you play games and you love to play games, it's worth the trip. We met people that had come from New Zealand. We met, Andrew was from New Zealand. We played with somebody from Perth, Tapio from Perth, who was an absolute gem and a champion to play with. Every game we played with him, he killed us. And it was hilarious. It was hilarious. But we had the best time. So people were coming from all over Australia. It's not expensive to go to. I can't remember what my ticket was for 3 days. It wasn't a lot of money, guys. And it was a blast. It was possibly some of the best games I've ever had, just because of the vibe and where it was. And it was just games, 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 games. There was no stopping to make lunch for the peanut. There was no stopping to eat lunch. Man, that was a trial. Trying to get lunch. You basically tools down, racing across the street, trying to find something we could get at a food court, throw it in and get back to the table. There weren't a lot of food options there, which is fine. It's fine. I'm not saying cater. But that was probably one of the challenges, was trying to get fed without meaningfully drawing down on your game time. But other than that, it was 11 out of 10. It was really, really special. And if you love playing, this should absolutely be on your calendar, because that's what it's all about. I want to move on and talk a little bit about PAX Australia. PAX Australia is the largest gaming convention conference in Australia, but it's not dedicated exclusively to play. PAX Australia has everything. They've got digital games. They've got retro games. They've got pinball. They've got tabletop. They've got merchandise. They've got graphic novels. They've got figurines and wall art and cosplay and clothing. PAX has everything. PAX Australia takes over the entirety of the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre, which is not a small place by any means. So PAX is next week, It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I went last year with Lou. We had a ball. We had an absolute blast. And I cannot wait for next week. We're driving down. It's just me this year because, unfortunately, Lou has this little thing called graduation. It's so soft. HSC, which is a high school certificates, the final exams. I mean, get your priorities straight, girly. Honestly. So I'm going down myself. I love a road trip. I'm driving down on Thursday. I'm going to be in that queue Friday morning at 9 o'clock. Doesn't open till 10. Not because I need to be the first at anything, but because I want to be in there for as long as possible. The main expo hall opens at 10. I think it closes at 6 from memory. You get to play games. You get to try games. They've got a free play zone with the game library as well. And it's massive. And there are people there that just want to play. But the best part is you can spend from 10 to 6, you can go and look and touch all the new, you can sit at the tables, and you can try new games. And last year, I tried games that I would never try. Games I'm like, well, stuff it, I'm here. I'm going to sit and I'm going to try this game. Games I would never try. And I found things that I thought, this has a place. This has a place in the bunker. There was no bunker back then, interestingly enough. But this has a place on the shelf because PAX gave that to me, that opportunity to try these things that I wouldn't otherwise try, because in our gaming circle, no one's going to buy this particular game potentially because it doesn't have enough ongoing interest. And it was great. I had such a good time. Last year, I went for 2 of the 3 days, and that was my greatest regret of going is I had to work back on Monday. So I went down, we went Friday, Saturday, we came home Sunday. This year, I'm going all 3 days, traveling Thursday, traveling Monday. Highlights from PAX. So let's go through the list. You've got demos. So many demos. As I said, a lot of them games I would likely never buy. Last year, I got to try a whole lot of new games. But you get to meet people as well. You get to meet designers. I got to meet Jean-Paul Jacques, who is the designer and graphic designer for Land vs. Sea. He was an absolute gentleman. Happy to have a chat. I had a chat with him. I think I was talking to him for 6 minutes before someone came over. And he said, you know, he made this game. And I went, what? I was talking to him about how much I love Land vs. Sea. And he was just smiling, going, oh, yeah, I love it too. And someone else came over and goes, you know, he's the designer. And very humble, lovely guy. Interestingly, Land vs. Sea has an expansion coming next year. And last year, there were a number of concurrent releases. I previously mentioned White Castle. I'm hoping this year, maybe Daitoshi, Rock Hard 1977, both from Devir, might be there. We've talked previously about Apiary, which was a demo I did last year. I had zero interest. I left that that day buying Apiary. I bought it. If it weren't for PAX, I wouldn't have bought it. I wouldn't have it. Some demos are really quick. Some you play 20 minutes of the game if they're really long games. Some of them you get to play the whole game. Games like Sky Team, you get to play a whole game, and you play the whole game, you experience the whole game start to finish. I stood at a stand-up bar table and played Sky Team with a guy I'd never met, and we landed that plane on our first try. We high-fived. We high-fived like we were all mates. We high-fived and cheered when that plane hit the tarmac. It was a blast. I ended up buying Sky Team. Some games like Turing Machine, I sat down at the table, got a demo on playing Turing Machine. I played 5 minutes, and I went, nope. No, thank you. Not for me. This is literally the game that's going to be waiting for me in hell. PAX also offers after-hours gaming. So the main exhibition halls, they're open 10 to 6. From 6, the free play tables are all yours. They're there all day. I don't play games typically during the day, but from 6, the free play tables are there. And this is where PAX and PlayCon start to overlap. You know, you've got the free play tables in the library. People set up games. They'll put signs up that say, looking for a player. And the after-hours gaming can go, I think they kick us out at about 11:30. I'm usually done by about 10:30 or 11 by then because it's exhausting. The day's exhausting, but we'll see. I've just bought a half carton of sugar-free energy drinks to pack in my suitcase. So, you know, I should be fine. Being 50 is fine. It's all fine. And the vibe at the tables is welcoming. You can set up a game and people will sit. You can sit with other people. They're looking for players. These are our people. Right, so the after-hours gaming is amazing. It's International Gaming Week in Melbourne next week. So there are gaming things going on all through the CBD, all through downtown, all week long. It's not quite Gen Con, but you know the bars and restaurants have theme things going on. Federation Square has stuff on every night. I get down there Thursday early. I go to Federation Square where they have speedrunners, they have esports, they've got tabletop, they've got cosplay competitions, they've got DJs. It's wild. And if you're into other games other than tabletop gaming, I'm a video gamer from way back. I I don't play a lot of video games now. I'm very picky about what I play now. But, you know, Bethesda's going to be there. The big names are going to be there. And you can, if you want to stand in a queue for half an hour to play 15 minutes of something new and see if it's for you, you've got that opportunity as well. You've got the opportunity to buy anything you want related to gaming. You can buy Steam Decks and ROG Allies. You can buy games. You can buy merch. You can buy your cosplay components, foam core and paint and all that stuff. You could, there's in the tabletop section, there's a whole area to learn how to do tabletop wargaming. There's paint and take, where you can sit down, they give you a mini for nothing, you paint the mini, you take it away. You could do that every day, they wouldn't care. They just love having people there that share loving what they do. And in the tabletop space, there's trading card games. Magic the Gathering always has a huge space and presence. And this year, it wasn't released in Australia last year when PAX was on, but this year, Lorcana has a huge sort of arena built up where you can sit, you can learn to play Lorcana. They've got a Lorcana shop. I'll likely be picking up a couple of starter decks for the Peanut and I, because I think she will love Lorcana. And shopping. Man, if you want to shop, PAX has got you covered. Honestly, I go with a big budget because, hashtag FOMO, I don't necessarily go with a big shopping list. You know, last year I came back with, I think, 80% of the budget or 60% of the budget that I went down with. I did buy a few things. I don't go to shop. I am on the hunt for a couple of items this year. I'm looking for a spunky dice tray, maybe some art for the wall in the bunker. There's some games on my list that potentially, if they're on early release there, I will absolutely grab. Games like Daitoshi, Babylon. If Seti's there, I'll grab a copy of Seti. But the thing I'm always careful of is the prices there. You know, often my advice, if you're going to PAX or any of these conventions, is just curb your FOMO a little and just check the prices, because often the stuff that's for sale there isn't just not cheaper, it's sometimes more expensive because they're counting on you to be swept up in that vibe. Like, I'm here. Oh, look at this. It's here. It's in front of me. I'm going to buy it. And you take it home and you realize you could have saved $20. There are a number of things that I looked at. I had them in my hand and I looked them up and they were literally $20 cheaper at Amazon. I'm like, well, as much as I want that game because it's in front of me right now and it's pretty, it's in my hand, it's filling me with dopamine, if I save $20 on three games, that's another small game I could buy. You know, and so I'm very careful. What I've done this year is I've got a shopping list of all the games that I might be looking for, and I've popped the cheapest price that I have found for that game in that shopping list up front. So when I get there, if I see it, if it's the same price, I'm like, yep, sure, maybe I'll grab that. I've got a budget. I'm going down with money in my pocket to spend at PAX because I'm there to have fun. But if it's more expensive, I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to get it. For me, one of the things I did last year, which was really great, is I'm going, and I did it late in the con. I did it late in PAX, is I'm going straight to the ding and dent section. Something I've learned after PlayCon and after, you know, 3 years of shopping online for games, is I am an absolute troll for the ding and dent sections. Ding and dent section at Advent Games, More Than Meeples has one, and they update it regularly. You can go there and you can get a game that has a tiny dent on one corner, and it'll be like 40% off. Last year at PAX, I bought the uber over the top Ticket to Ride version with the little tins of the plastic model trains with every expansion in the big box. Ticket to Ride isn't a game I was going to add to my collection. I've played it. Ticket to Ride is fine. But now I've got the one with toys. And when I put on the table the Fox and the Peanut, they go, ooh, I want the pink trains. Ooh, I want the blue trains. And it gets them to the table more often. It's not about me. It's like, this is unselfishly. Just buying this game is for them. It was for them. It's definitely for them. I'm telling myself that over and over. But straight to the ding and dent. Honestly, on day one, that's the first place I'm going to go and have a look, because the other thing I noticed is that as the days progress, the ding and dent section gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, because the guys that are selling the games don't want to put them back on the truck and take them out. So yeah, I'm going to go straight to the ding and dent section and see what's what, because you got a game that you're going to take $40 off because one of the boxes got a little dent on the corner, I'm your guy. I don't give the slightest shit. If there's a dent in the corner of the box, it's going to sit in my bunker. If I play it 15 times, chances are it's going to have a dent on it by the time I'm done. I'm not buying these things to look at the box. I'm buying them for the experience inside the box. I'm your guy. So I'm going straight to the ding and dent. First thing, Friday, check in. I'm going straight there to have a look. Last year, one of the sellers, I'm going to say it was Good Games, who are fantastic, by the way, at Place Like PAX. They had buy three, get one free for the exit games. And the exit games were cheaper than they are in the open market. I think they're about $20 a game. So I got 8 exit games for $120. I love an exit game, right? And so does the peanut. So I came home with 8 exit games. And the vibe is insane. You know, the vibe at shopping, the vibe there, the vibe in the line to get in. The vibe in the line, there is no one going to a conference. There's no one going to PlayCon. There's no one going to PAX who's going there to have a bad time. You know, even in line, I'm not one that loves waiting in line. I'm half a century old. I don't have time for that. I don't have the interest in standing in line. But if getting in line a little early at PAX is going to give me an extra 40 minutes at PAX, then I'm very happy to do so. And that's the genuine situation, is that, you know, particularly on day one, the queuing hall it's 15,000 people deep. So if I get there an hour before it starts, it means that I'm not going to spend 35, 40 minutes sneaking my way through the line once it opens and potentially losing 30, 40, 50 minutes of the actual con time. And there's plenty to do in line. They've got AV presentations. They've got, you know, bouncy beach balls. They've got, they have these really clever, huge sort of signs with holes in them and with points listed on them. And so people were trying to get the beach ball through the holes. It was low tech, low key, but it made that hour go pretty quickly. You know, and honestly, if you've got a coffee in your hand, the vibe in line, it's electric. It is absolutely electric. And there's no one getting shitty in these crowds. You know, you go to something like the Royal Easter Show, and by the end of the day, everyone's had enough. It's like, oh man, I've walked 37 kilometers and I've just had enough. Get me out of here. At PAX, it's 6 o'clock and they're like ringing the bell and flicking the lights. They're like, the exhibition hall is closing. And people are like, oh, no, give us more. I could probably go to PAX if it wasn't so special once a year and just walk around and just walk through PAX and just suck it up because the vibe is so good. So that's PAX. If you have the ability to go to PAX, it's a very special time. I think the 2 days I had at PAX last year, and I'm not talking about the birth of my children or my wedding day, so let's not get nitpicky here. Let's take all of those holy grail moments out of my life. I think the 2 days I had at PAX last year were probably the two greatest, most fun days I have ever had. And I've met James Hetfield from Metallica. Okay, like, the 2 days I had at PAX were so extraordinary. I got home at the end of those days, and I was literally going to bed with a great big stupid 6-year-old Christmas smile on my face. If you've got any way to get to PAX, maybe not this year because it's quite late, but if PAX is not on your radar or you've written it off going, it's too hard, it's too far, it's too much. If board games are your thing, don't be put off by all the other stuff that's there, because the board game hall is gargantuan. I spent both days exclusively in the tabletop board gaming hall last year. I still didn't see everything. I still didn't do everything. And it was the absolute greatest 2 days. Put it on your list. Now on to my favorite part of the show, where we here, and by we, I mean me, give someone the clap. This week's clap goes to Aftergame. Aftergame is a fledgling app that aims to help manage your gaming schedule. It was instrumental in getting games scheduled efficiently at PlayCon, and PlayCon embraced it wholeheartedly. So Aftergame, what you can do is you hop in Aftergame and you can say, well, I'm going to be at PlayCon, and on the Friday at PlayCon at 10 o'clock, I'm going to have a game of Cthulhu Wars. And you pop it in and you go boink, and sometime later, it's filled with people who want to play Cthulhu Wars. And you can even say, I only want people who've played before. I'm not going to be teaching you, so I only want experienced players. If you're sitting down with, say, a Lacerda game, and you really don't want someone who's never played anything but Ticket to Ride sitting down for a Lacerda game, because there's going to be tears, both from them and you, in frustration. Aftergame lets you schedule these games. They let you put thresholds of participation in the games. You can even put a game in and say, look, I want to play this game. I don't know how to play. I'm looking for a teacher. And people can hop in and go, yeah, hey, I know how to play. I'm going to join your game and I'll teach you how to play. Aftergame spectacular. I have no idea how the team at Aftergame are monetizing at this point, but I hope they are, and I hope they're doing well with it, because Aftergame made my time at PlayCon such a breeze. I was able to schedule games, I was able to attend games, I was able to track people down that I played with before to play another game. So, for example, I played a game with Mr. Tapio, who's gotten a shout out here. We played a game with Tapio. I was able to schedule another game and invite him to that game. Say, hey, tomorrow we're going to play this one. Do you want to come? You can friend people in it like Facebook. You can't message. But what I'll be able to do is set up a game at PAX and go, hey, I wonder if Tapio's here. Because I think he is going to be there, and I can invite him to a game. And if he is there, then you can set that up. Unfortunately, PAX has not embraced integrating Aftergame with the entire con, but I know that Let's Play Games, I believe Let's Play Games and another one have for their demos, and so I've been able to sign up for 9 demos on Friday and Saturday. And what that means is I don't have to go and get in line for a demo. They're scheduled. Aftergame integrates with your calendar, right? So I've scheduled these games and I've gone, pop that in my calendar. So I don't have to go to Aftergame and go back and forth between the different bookings. I can look at my calendar and go, what have I got? Where is it booked? It says, you're playing, whatever it is, Catan Spacefarers at 2:30 at stand C14. I'm making that up. I am playing Catan Spacefarers. I'm looking forward to that. I've never played Catan, ever. Oh, Sarles. So I am looking forward to that. Aftergame lets you do that. And I'm delighted that some of the distributors, designers, and or, you know, demo tables are using Aftergame and PAX, because it means I get more efficient use out of those days. I'm very hopeful that Aftergame gets picked up by more conferences and gaming conventions. Aftergame, you've officially got the clap. No trip to the chemist required. No cream, no prescriptions. Enjoy. And that concludes this week's Mindless Drivel. Thank you for listening. As a reminder, there will be no episode next week. I'll catch you in 2 weeks' time for the wrap-up from all things PAX Australia. You can reach us on all the socials. Find us on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can email me personally at onemanclapping@gmail.com. That's W-O-N Man Clapping, as in I have won all the games, which I will never do. You can find us on Instagram at @OneManClapping. And you can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG if you're interested in joining a guild that has literally nothing in it, but being ready and waiting for when stuff is. You can subscribe to Guild 4426. And thank you as always for your time. I always appreciate the fact that you will sit there and let my voice go into your ears for no reason other than you have a mild and passing interest in the garbage that comes out of my mouth hole. This week's episode has been brought to you by the crippling discomfort of being over 50. Thank you, hospitality, for a lifetime of recovery, both physically and mentally. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. And remember, when you play alone, there's no one to tap the table when you F up a rule. Peace out, mofos. My back. Oh. #50.
Dice they break, echoes pound and hearts they quake.